all we did was we derived the Yangian algebra for GLA. So it's generated by symbols. T, I, J, say L for I, J equals 1 to N. These are the GLN indices, and L is 0, 1, 2. It's some non-negative integer. And this has a certain commutation relations where the commutator of two of these guys will be expressed as some linear plus quadratic expression in the same things. So the relation we derived was that, let's find the correct page of the notes. Delta KJ DIL A plus B. And these are just the classical commutation relations. They're just here, the commutation relation of matrices. And then there was a quantum correction. There's a minus sign, the sum. Minus DIL A plus B minus 1 minus OR DK OR. So this, okay, I don't particularly expect you to memorize this polynomial, this, you know, particular quadratic expression. It's just what pops out of the relations. But the slick way of remembering this is if we introduce a generating function, which is delta ij plus z minus 1 dij 0 plus, with the h bar, sorry, z minus 2 h bar tij 1, and so on, then the expression looks like or z minus z prime. Tz, Tz prime. Then this equation is equivalent to this equation. Okay. So Chibra told me that actually Pedro had written this down, which I didn't appreciate. Except he used L instead of T, and he called it the monodromy matrix. Hey, Pedro. And you call it something different. But I call this the Yangian algebra. You call it something?
RLL, LLR.
OK. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So this is the first example of a quantum group that people discovered in the was the early 80s by Fadeev and so on. And like, you know, Drinfeld's study of this, like Drinfeld's study of Yang-Baxter equation and these relations led to the whole theory of quantum groups. So today I want to talk about another structure on this algebra that is, which is present on any quantum group, which is called the co-product structure. So I'll explain it by drawing the same kinds of pictures that we drew last time involving Wilson lines.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
Because I have to miss last lecture. So in that next last lecture, you were showing that you could get the classical limit of the R matrix from the one loop exchange.
Yes.
What's the statement about the full R matrix? Did you show last time that the full R matrix can be recovered from?
I didn't show that because for GLN, the proof is kind of stupid. The OR matrix is basically unique. It's a unique solution of the Young-Baxter equation up to some relabeling of the parameters.
Uh-huh.
And those relabelings of the parameters all have some physical meaning in terms of the will, in terms of things you can do to the Wilson line. You can move it around, you can change how the abelian factor acts. So up to the ambiguities in quantizing the classical Wilson line, you find it has to be that.
Okay.
For other groups, there's a beautiful theorem of Grünfeld, which tells you the Yangian is a unique object which quantizes this classical limit. So it's a very rigid thing. So if you produce something with these properties, it has to be the right thing. So if you want to actually compute, you know, that the seven loop gluon exchange, you know, I mean, good luck, it's going to be very hard. Okay, so we saw that if I have a horizontal Wilson line, and we have a vertical Wilson line in the fundamental representation, then we do these pictures last time. So the horizontal Wilson line was somewhere, and the vertical guy was at z. And I put an incoming state, I, an outgoing state, j. And this, the space of states at the end of the horizontal Wilson line is v. And such a picture led to the operator, t, I, j of z, as some linear map from these states there. They move down, they exchange some gluons, and they evolve to the other end. That's this operator Tij, which, and we calculated last time that this must satisfy these relations. Now, so if now we have two horizontal Wilson lines, say V and W, or I'm using this notation to indicate the, really the states at the end, the vector space of states at the end of the Wilson line. And I can do the same picture. And this gives a linear map. So what I want to explain for the first part of today's lecture is two things. So firstly, can we compute this linear map in terms of the linear map associated to the individual Wilson lines? And we'll see there's a formula for that, an easy formula. And secondly, well, we might take these guys very close together. And then we might think of these two horizontal Wilson lines fusing into a single horizontal Wilson line. And we'll understand that we can do that. This gives the collection of Wilson lines a kind of tensor product structure. So the theory is topological in the xy plane. So the distance between Wilson lines is irrelevant. So this means, so if we have, you know, in this xy plane, there's no scale in this xy plane. So we can look closer, look farther away, we get this the same. So if we have two horizontal Wilson lines, and say VW, then you know, we can bring them together if you like. We can either move the lines or else we can look further away so that they look like they're fused together into a single object. Yep.
They have to be in the same z plane, right?
They have to be at the, well, yes, they have to be at the same point in z. Mm-hmm. That's right. I mean, if they were at different points of z, they could slide past each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. But they may involve z derivatives. They could be at zero and have some number of be coupled in such a way that they have z derivatives on those lines. So we have two guys, then we can bring them together to get a new Wilson line V tensor W, whose Hilbert space is V tensor W, but which is coupled. The way this guy is coupled to the theory might be in some complicated way. So now, so we have this these operators induce the subscript of V tensor W or V. Is the operator for the corresponding horizontal Wilson line, like the monotropy matrix. So we want to derive, we want to express this guy for V tensor W in terms of the corresponding things for just V or just W. So how do we do that? So we take, if we have them very close, then it's V tensor W. This expression, this kind of diagram leads to T I J of Z of V tensor W. On the other hand, because of the topological symmetry, I can slide these guys so they're very, very far. If they're very far, they don't interact with each other. They're kind of infinitely far apart. And what I need to do in the middle is sum over intermediate states on this vertical guy. So this is equal to the sum of T I K at Z associated to V tensored, this acts on the V factor, T K J of Z acting on the W factor. So we write that out again. So we've derived the set entity. Okay. Any questions about this derivation? Yeah?
I don't quite understand the left hand side. Does this correspond to one Wilson line only, or is it when they are very close together?
It's, they're very close together, so that I'm treating them as a single Wilson line. And I'm calling that Wilson line V tensor W. That's the name of that Wilson line.
So it's So why can you take them to be just one line when they are close together?
Because when you look far apart, you don't see, you don't kind of distinguish that there's any difference. It's just like the OPA of operators. Right? If I have a set, they're line operators and not local operators, but it's if I'm in a topological theory, then I can take two operators and take their OPE. And because it's topological, the OPE does not depend on the distance. So the OPE is just a single operator, which is the fusion. But it's just the same here. Yeah?
So I would expect if I had just two lines that don't, two horizontal lines that don't interact with each other in any way, that they're just acting on B plus W, kind of like, and so the tensor product accounts for the fact that they are going to interact with each other, there's going to be some exchange between them or something?
No, it's V tensor W because it's two particles.
So if, yeah, like the two particle state, and two part, it's not like two separate particles.
Yeah, it's not like one particle here and
then. Yeah.
Yes, it's, makes sense. I mean,
No.
I mean, not that. Yeah.
So you could imagine just trying to compute this line operator OBE not in the presence of some fundamental Wilson line that happens to be normal to them or something. What's the?
We'll do that calculation in a minute, and we'll find the same answer. So that's the kind of fun thing you could do. So let's take this expression and figure out what it, you know, if we write t in terms of a generating function within of these little t's, what does this expression tell us for how the little t's act? So there's so many indices pop hanging around, so I'll use the same kind of notation. So if you just expand out both sides and equate coefficients, that little t, I, j, of, let me get my notes so I don't make a mistake. J of say n, that's across a, t, in the representation of V tensor W, t, I, j, a, and V tensor, the identity in W, plus the identity in V tensor, t, I, j, a, and W. So if you think about it, this is like the classical contribution. What's this telling us? So these guys, as we saw last time, have the interpretation of how does, if I take my connection, my gauge field, and I differentiate it with respect to z a times, how does that guy couple to my Wilson line? That's what this matrix tells us. And here we're saying, well, the coupling to the V line and the W line is just independent. It's, you know, it's V tensor, it either couples to V and does nothing on W, or couples to W and does nothing on V. But there's a quantum correction where the way the gauge field couples to the fused Wilson line mixes both things. Okay, so this will be an important formula, so I'll come back to this. Oops, I wrote this wrong, sorry. I wrote the wrong indices, or S. Okay. So I think I'm gonna not, if you like algebra, you might be familiar with the concept of a Hopf algebra. And the expression we've just written down is something called a coproduct, which makes the Yangian into a Hopf algebra, because it takes one of the generators and gives us a tensor product of two things in the algebra. But I don't think I'm going to introduce that language today. I'm just going to write it in terms of particular representations. A kind of interesting and non-trivial fact is that if Tij A and V and Tkl A and W.
You want plus or the least part
square? No, this is exact. Yeah, because once we have the OR matrix, we can write the RGT presentation exactly. So if these guys each satisfy the relations of the algebra, then so does this expression, V tensor W, which is, if we define it by this expression. What you can check is, suppose you naively guessed that, you know, there was only this term, that the two guys were kind of didn't really couple together. Then this would not satisfy the relations of the algebra. You would realize that you have to have some quadratic correction in order to satisfy the relations of the algebra. So there's this kind of intricate connection between the relations of the algebra, this coproduct structure, and the OR matrix, and they're all kind of determined by each other. They all constrain each other very strongly. So let me now come to Dylan's question and see if we can compute this just directly. That we can, you know, just like the way you can compute the OPEs of local operators by direct calculations with Feynman diagrams, you can do the same to compute the OPEs of Wilson lines. And I want to do the calculation and see, recover this formula. So to do that, we need to translate a little bit. So let me remind you how these matrices relate to the coupling of the gauge field. Suppose if A is the gauge field, which we recall as three components, then it couples to the horizontal Wilson line. Say V. By say like the integral over x. Path ordered exponential of the integral over x of one over I factorial get the expression right. Del z to be a. So what we're writing is saying, so in principle, the z derivatives of the connection can couple to the Wilson line too. Or ordinary Wilson line would be one where there's no z derivatives, but there's nothing to stop us in this particular theory from writing down gauge invariant quantities involving z derivatives of the gauge field. And these t's are the matrices which couple, the TA is the matrix which couples to the this particular component of the eighth derivative of the gauge field. So for example, let's start by thinking, assuming that V and W are just ordinary Wilson lines with no Z derivatives. If these guys couple, say, at Z equals 0, with no Z derivatives.
Sorry, this is a new definition.
This, I actually give this in the lecture you missed, but it's new to you, yes. Does it make sense to you?
Yeah,
I know. Okay. So suppose we start with ordinary Wilson lines which have no Z derivatives. Then, because of this expression, then their tensor product will have a single z derivative, at least a first order in h bar. Since this quantity is not equal to 0, it is equal to h bar times something, we will find that the fusion of the Wilson lines will be coupled with one z derivative to order h bar. So we'd like to verify this concretely just by thinking about Feynman diagrams. So how do we compute this? Let me draw the relevant pictures. So suppose we have two horizontal guys. They're both at x equals 0. One is at x equals 0, or say y equals 0. The other is at y equals epsilon. And then they can exchange a gauge field, which then goes off like that. So as epsilon goes to 0, just like in ordinary OPE calculations, we separate them by a small amount and then take a limit. As epsilon goes to 0, we'll find that this quantity will involve a single z derivative. Or just like an integral over the Wilson line of del ZA. Okay, and is this kind of cartoon understandable? We'll do the calculation in detail. Any questions? Okay. So that means everybody understands perfectly, or nobody understands anything, or I'm never sure. So I think I need to bring up my other set of notes to recall how this calculation goes. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to go back a little bit to to maybe the first lecture or the second lecture. So we'll recall what the field sourced by these Wilson lines is. It's by these two Wilson lines, and then we'll take, that's what the gluon coming out from one of those guys, that gives us the field sourced by that Wilson line, and we calculated that. And now we'll wedge those guys together and integrate them against some other gauge field and see what we get. So the field sourced by the Wilson lines is dz bar del y. There's going to be some factors of 2 pi that I won't ignore. So this is equal to so we're going to take this guy, which comes from the line at y equals 0, and the other one, which comes from the line at y equals epsilon, and wedge them together with some other gauge field. So. Let's call this guy, and so the other one, from the line at y equals epsilon, we have for the same reason, we just replace this by 1 minus epsilon. So let's call this, say, omega 0. Let's call this omega epsilon. So we need to calculate that the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of the integral for y z d bar of some gauge field okay. Whatever this does, this will tell us how this gauge field couples. So we're fixing the value of x, we're not integrating over x because nothing is going to involve anything complicated in x. By the symmetry, you can't involve any x derivatives, so we'll just be an ordinary integral over x. So at a fixed value of x, we're calculating how this component of the gauge field is coupled. So it'll be given by this integral. And we want to find that it's proportional to the z derivative of this guy. OK, so firstly.
Why wasn't the dx a
thing? Oh, because I wasn't integrating over x. I wanted like if I can. I'm trying to figure out the coupling, the local coupling at a point in the Wilson line, which is then integrated over x. So, okay. So the first thing you might wonder is, in this expression, the location we're integrating over here is that vertex in the middle. And that vertex can be anywhere. So why should we find a local quantity at y equals 0, which is what we wanted to find? Because we wanted it to be an actual local Wilson line. So you notice that away from y equals z equals z bar equals 0, omega 0 wedge omega epsilon is smooth as epsilon goes to 0 and converges to omega 0 wedge omega 0, which is 0. So away from the location of the Wilson line, we can't see anything. So whatever we get will just be localized along the Wilson line. Second step is, a dimensional analysis argument. So this implies that whatever we get will be some derivative of this guy at the origin. So what derivatives can it possibly be? If I strip this off, it looks like if I view this quantity as a distribution, we're saying that the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of this distribution is a delta function with some number of derivatives. What derivatives can we possibly have? You do some little dimensional analysis argument, and you see that the only possibilities are a z derivative. We can only find exactly one z derivative. So these steps are just to kind of simplify life a bit, little bit. Now let's go. So we don't lose any generality then, because we find exactly one z derivative in assuming that this guy must be proportional to z. So we'll assume ax is equal to z, and we'll plug this in, and then we'll compute the integral as epsilon goes to 0 and find some non-zero constant. So the integral for y, z, z bar. So I'm assuming this is z. And now let's plug in the explicit expressions for these forms. So I've written in the bottom parts. Now the top part, we're going to wedge this guy with this guy. Before we go further, is everybody reasonably happy with what we've done so far? I figure, this is a class of physicists, you guys must be infinitely better at computing integrals than I am. OK, so we wedge these guys together, And you'll realize that a bunch of terms will cancel. There's, of course, you can't have something with the two dz bars or two dy's, obviously, but there's the z bar dy dz bar term. The piece of that which comes with the zy cancels with this one. So the only non-zero term is the z bar dy dz bar epsilon term. So if you do that, I mean, you could know that immediately, because when epsilon is 0, we're wedging a form with itself, which gives us 0. So the only thing which must be non-zero is a term which involves an epsilon. So z, z bar, y, epsilon. What did I get? Sorry. Yes, thank you. Yeah, that would have broken. That would not have been good. Yes. OK, so now we just have some straightforward integral. And we can change coordinates. If we change coordinates, like y tilde, if you do this change of coordinates, you find, you think about how many powers of epsilon do I have? Well, on the top, I find 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. On the bottom, I find 3, and 3 is 6. So this becomes the integral z, z bar. Well, I already have had an epsilon. But from this change of coordinates, I pick up a 1 over epsilon. But if you think about it, here, epsilon could be positive or negative. But the thing coming from this change of coordinates can be only positive. So it's really the absolute value of epsilon. Epsilon of the absolute value. Then times an integral which does not involve epsilon and is just some number. So it's equal to sine of epsilon times some constant. And you know, you can compute the constant with the usual tricks of Feynman integration. Great. So to sum up, what we've calculated is that if we take these two horizontal Wilson lines and exchange this gluon, and if this is at epsilon, this is at 0, A, that this is of the form, we're coupling the gauge field A with a some constant in front, which I'll ignore. There's a factor of the sine of epsilon, so it changes sign if these guys cross. And then I have involved the first derivative of my connection. Okay. Now this matches exactly what we found. I mean, I didn't include the constants. It's a real pain to get all the constants right, but they are right. But this matches exactly what we found by thinking about the RTT relation. that if I took two Wilson lines which did not have any z derivatives, and I brought them together, then the RTT expression tells us there must be a single z derivative at order h bar. And we've calculated this exactly just by thinking directly about these Wilson lines. And the other nice thing you see from this is that the Wilson lines, form something like an algebra, because if these were local operators instead of Wilson lines, I could have taken them together and computed their commutator by computed their OPE, and I would have had an associative algebra. Here, it's like a categorical version of that. But you know, I have Wilson lines, I can fuse them together, there's an associativity property. But because I have this, because we've calculated that there's a sign appearing, we see this algebra is non-commutative. If I bring this from this way, bring this Wilson line to this guy from above or from below, I get something different. It's really a non-commutative algebra of Wilson lines. Okay. Yeah, I suppose I stopped a bit earlier than I thought, but I don't think there's anything else I wanted to explain today. So unless there's any questions, I'll stop there.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So this is not the same as considering different representations for the Wilson line, right? Which would be another thing. You could start with fundamental representation and then fuse and get other representations.
No, this is
metric and so on, right?
This is that.
Here it's really the tensor product of the two spaces. You are not going to irreducible representations.
No, I'm not. That's right. I'm not decomposing this into irreducible representations. So what we're seeing is if I take two fundamentals
mm-hmm.
and I fuse them, I get something which is an extension, and that's a non-trivial extension of the symmetric and stereo powers because of the Z.
Yeah.
That's what this will tell us, I think.
So normally, what I'm used to is when we fuse and construct other representations like symmetric, anti-symmetric, and so on, they are non-trivial in terms of the fundamental ones. It's not just multiplying them together and so on.
Yeah,
typically some shifts of the spectral parameter.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So this here we find the quantity you get by fusing two fundamentals at the same point will be irreducible, which is kind of strange because
yeah.
as in a representation of GLN it is not irreducible. So, but there are some special values of the spectral parameter at which the extra extension class vanishes, and then you can split it into two pieces. Is that the kind of thing you're thinking about?
No.
No?
So if I want to construct the R matrix where one line is in the fundamental and the other line is in the symmetric representation.
Yes.
In terms of the fundamental R matrix, it is not just multiplied to fundamental R matrix, because that would give me this product with and without it.
Yes.
So instead, what one can do is evaluate the auxiliary parameter of the two fundamental lines at some special values that will eventually project it into the symmetric.
Yes, that's right. That's what I'm.
Ah, okay.
Same thing. So if I move the spectral parameters of one of these lines around, at some point, the thing I'll get will be reducible and can be decomposed. But generically, it will.
Because here we are putting the two lines at the same z.
At the same z, yes. And
but it should be interesting to consider the case where they are not at the same z, but they are at the z separated by this special value
Yeah, exactly. So to do that, you would say to move one of them in z, you would introduce some z derivatives into the coupling of one of them, and then you should be able to calculate some special value at which I presume what you want is that this term vanishes at some special value, and that means.
Yeah.